G'day and welcome back to the Raw Rugby Podcast. It's preview time, round six, and joining me, Christy Doran, is the editor of the Raw, Tony Harper. Harps, good to have you back on the show.
Thanks, mate. I've signed a two-year deal worth roughly $550,000 to $600,000 per year, so I'm glad to be back. My heart is with the Raw, Christy.
Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be nice? But if you don't quite understand what Tony Harper's talking about, he's talking about the news overnight on Wednesday. This is that Max Jorgensen has re-signed with Australian Rugby through to the end of 2026. Interesting that it's only until the end of 26, given that there's a Rugby World Cup in 27. And though Max Jorgensen went to France last year, he didn't get on the field and is yet to make his debut. But perhaps it's obviously, it's just divided a little bit around, and we don't know the exact figure. I was told what is the initial three-year deal, but I imagine that the figures wouldn't have changed too much. But I'm assuming that Max can think that he'll get a higher deal coming into a World Cup, having proved himself.
Yeah, well, well done on the reporting of that in the first place. I'd like to kind of get an idea of why you think, you know, and you mentioned it there, the World Cup being the year later, why he hasn't gone that full length. Do you feel like he's maybe keeping some powder dry for a later NRL approach, or is it just how it's kind of been worked out at the moment? And when you talk about the reaction, so the reaction on a couple of your stories, the one where he actually signed the deal and confirmed it, and the one where you wrote about the contract offer, a lot of our readers, you know, I guess they're kind of looking at it and wondering where the value is there, especially in the context of Andrew Kellaway is arriving at the club soon and the stocks that they have in those kind of positions. I know you kind of believe that the young guy from the Roosters, Joseph Suwali, is going to be probably more in a different position to fullback. But how do you kind of see the pecking order there looking ahead? And, you know, is he worth the money in the first place?
All right, we'll get to it. Probably the first thing, yeah, he's signed until the end of 26, probably because at the moment Rugby Australia isn't in the strongest financial position. They've clearly, late last year, off the back of a terrible World Cup campaign where they didn't get a private equity deal through, they've borrowed $80 million. So they're hoping by the Lions series that they've got their ducks in a row and they're in a stronger position financially, not necessarily blow it all on players, but be more selective. They'll have a national coach. It's a young playing group. They'll have a bit more of an idea around who's who in the zoo. The other thing, Max Jorgensen, he's 19. He's had a few injury issues, a bit like Pat Cummins did early in his career as a cricketer, how he physically develops. But is he worth it? Absolutely. And I think that it's a pretty middle ground for both parties. I think they'll both be quite happy with the situation, with the state of affairs. He's supremely gifted out in the footy field with what he can offer up. But the big difference between him, James O'Connor, Quade Cooper, Curtly Beale, is that he doesn't make it about himself. He's a really pretty quiet, humble guy. He's not out there on social media. He's reserved and he's unflappable. He's made mistakes, as Darren Coleman said today, but he's responded really well and he doesn't go back into his shell. He's such a balanced runner as well. I think he'll be outstanding. Whether or not he's the Wallabies fullback in 2024 remains to be seen. But from next year and beyond, I certainly see him wearing that number 15 jersey.
Do you understand why some people just don't see it?
Well, yeah, I do, because you've got to have a forward pack to be able to give backs the opportunity to show what they can do and finish. Last year, Taniela Tupou and Will Skelton, two guys go down on the eve of the Wallabies' biggest pool match against Fiji. They drop down and the Wallabies don't have the cover. They've already lost Alan Alatoa and they didn't have the cover to be able to withstand the physical onslaught that Test Match Rugby provides. So by putting $500,000 away on a back, and he's the third Wallabies fullback option this year that's re-signed until the end of next year, which is Andrew Kellaway, Tom Wright, Max Jorgensen, their three fullbacks, like, what about the forwards? You know, what about the pretty light second row? And you think about it, the World Cup last year, Eddie Jones' first choice locks were Richie Arnold, Will Skelton, both based overseas. Where is the resources around ensuring that the second row stocks, which is generally where games are won and lost around the set piece and the physical battle, who's coming through there? And I feel like guys like Harry Hockings, he's not in Australia, he's in Japan, he's not played for an Australian side since 2020. There are some of the guys that I'd love to be prioritised. You know, the Mafus, who's playing in France, that gets lost. Miles Amatasiero is back, but there's probably not enough to really have that depth. But it doesn't mean that you shouldn't target good quality guys. And Jorgensen will be one. Swale would definitely be one. And he's most likely to feature, I think, at outside centre. He's spending time at the moment in the centres for the Sydney Roosters. He can clearly go on the wing, and he spent time at fullback at Kings when he was at school. And he was in the back three for the Australian schoolboys when they had a great win against New Zealand. So all in all, it's been a really positive thing for Australian rugby to have Max Jorgensen sign. The last thing I'll say is that the ramification and the knock-on effect around other players, particularly the inside backs, will be fascinating. So now that Jorgo's got about 500K a year, well, people like Carter Gordon, Noah Lalasia, who are off contract, that have played close to 20 tests in some cases, they're saying, you know what, 300, 350, that's not going to cut the mustard. I expect a bit more. So that'll be the fascinating thing over the next 6 weeks around who does RA and how much do they prioritise. And that's where the pecking order around the 10s particularly is going to be hugely important for Joe Schmidt and Peter Horn.
If you're not a Waratahs fan, and I know you're not a Waratahs fan, have you got every right to kind of look at what's going on at the moment and wonder if too much is being siphoned into one team here and one team is
I'm going to cut you off there. The Western Force have just got great halves over, you know, or reasonable halves in the last 6 months with Nick White, Ben Donaldson. The Rebels, whether or not they survive the year remains to be seen, but they managed to bring Luke Kahn and Taniela and other high-profile players down there. So I think it's a little bit short-sighted and naive, but what I would say is that I think Taniela Tupou, if the Rebels aren't in the competition in 2025, I think Taniela Tupou should go to the Waratahs. Why? The Waratahs and the Reds, the two biggest markets, they're the two sides that can attract the highest broadcast revenue. They're the sides that can attract the most people through the gates. And if you're thinking from a combinations and continuity perspective, having Taniela Tupou and Angus Bell, who are great mates on and off the field, having them packed down in the same front row can only build their connection, and it can only help, I would think, New South Wales rugby be able to get back to the days where they would have 30,000 regularly at Allianz Stadium in Sydney Football Stadium. I'd be stacking the Waratahs going forward and putting more resources into them. And, yes, I'm not a Waratahs fan, but for the sake of the show,
that's rugby, a story. Well, look, that's a story I really want to read on theraw.com.au, especially the comments that appear under that story when you...
I'm looking forward to them already.
So should we move it right along?
Yeah, we'll crack on. So, Tony, six games this Easter weekend, and there's some really interesting matchups right the way through. We'll make our way chronologically, and it's across the ditch first up. Crusaders, the winless Crusaders, 0-5 against the Chiefs. Talk us through some of the selection changes.
Is this going to be a good Friday for the Crusaders? It doesn't look that way, does it, to be honest? They're 0-5 and they're coming up to 0-6. You would think, even though the Chiefs have maybe made it a little bit easier for them, Damien McKenzie's got a knee niggle, and so they've taken the opportunity to have one of his two All Blacks rest weeks this week. He's been replaced by a rookie in Josh Jacomb. Samapeni Finau has been rested, but Anton Leonard Brown returns. Look, for the Crusaders, Rob Penny has made five changes. He's got to try whatever he can at the moment. He's left out Joe Moody, the All Blacks prop. There's a interesting story on the wing where ex-Wales winger Johnny McNichol appears for the club for the first time since 2016. But it's hard to see. The Crusaders, obviously, they've had this ongoing injury problems, and their captain and number 12, David Havili, has been injured last time out. Mitchell Drummond comes in at number 9 and will captain the side. This looks, despite DMACC not being there, and to be honest, the Chiefs did struggle when he has come off in recent weeks. Do you see that as maybe being enough for the Crusaders, or does it look fairly clear-cut to you?
Oh, well, when you lose someone like a David Havili, I think it almost evens itself out. Havili's, he's not just the glue for the Crusaders, but he's just got so much experience. Their issues come down to George Bell being one of them, really good around the field, but he can't get his throw right, and that happened again last week against the Blues. So I think the Chiefs, the more I look at it, you know, you've got Narrower that's come back on the right wing. You've got Quinn Tupou at inside centre. It's a stacked back line. And when you've got a rookie at 10 and you only have to look out to who you've got around you, it makes it a hell of a lot easier. The tight five will be a big matchup. And I think the Chiefs will be too strong for it and far out. You spare a thought, who would have thought if it does come to fruition that the Crusaders are 0-6, it'll be a long, long way back to press for anything in this year. There's still probably mathematically very much a chance, to qualify for the top eight, given the ridiculous nature of a 12-team competition where eight sides progress through to a quarterfinal.
You've got the Chiefs on the play-up odds there at $1.48 and the Crusaders $2.65, the line set at 5.5. So there is an expectation that it'll probably be closer than their positions on the table suggest, at least.
Yeah. Not surprising, but I'd back the Chiefs. Second game, and it's a really big one for an Australian derby. Both these sides desperately need a win off the back of a few defeats in a row. The Waratahs hosting the Rebels. What's happening there, team-wise?
A couple of great stories here with Lalekai Fekete back after that injury. He suffered in training just before the season started. I know you were out there that day and there was a lot of concern about how bad that was. Will Harrison as well. I think you wrote that it's 707 days since he last played between games. So maybe if you could talk about those two guys coming back, because I know that Fekete especially, that's such a great story to see him back. We were very, very concerned when that all happened.
Yeah, they were great fears. It was in a neck brace and there was an ambulance for a good 45 minutes on the north end of the field at Daceyville there. He's managed to come through and he's been training for a couple of weeks and great to see him on the bench alongside Will Harrison. Will Harrison, far out. The bloke, young guy, 24, he was in Dave Rennie's first ever Wallaby squad and he's just had a few injury-riddled years. But so good to see him back. And I'll tell you what, today I was at training there and he was the last out on the field. And I don't get out too much at the moment throughout the days, but I was standing behind the goalposts and I was catching a couple of balls and he didn't miss a single goal, Will Harrison. So I know that he's missed the odd one here or two, including for the Junior Wallabies back in 2019, but his kicking percentage in 2021, I think, was around 90%. Such a sharp shooter. So it's awesome to see him back, devastating knee injuries. So the two of them will come back via the bench. The other couple of changes in the forward pack, you've got Tom Ross coming in at tight head with Harry Johnson-Holmes is going to come off the bench. And then a tweak to the pack as well with Lachie Swinton, who was really impressive on the weekend against the Drawer off the bench. He's been promoted at blindside flanker. Hugh Sinclair comes in the second row and Ned Hattingen is also going to come off the bench himself. So the Waratahs they, from an injury point of view, are in a really strong position. They're only missing a couple of players. There's really no excuses for them. And they're coming up against a Rebels side that are in a completely different state of mind, both from an injury perspective and off-field drama as well.
Well, just on staying on the Waratahs briefly, you talk about the excuses. Matt Tamua was fantastic on your podcast earlier this week, and there's a story online encapsulating his thoughts on Darren Coleman and how much pressure has been on him from the board above him over rumours over his future to keep picking the same players. And, you know, they're coming off a 90-minute golden point, you know, devastation up in Fiji and heat middle of the day last week. So, I mean, I guess the excuses there are, do they still have the legs? Does a player like Jake Gordon, who's played so many minutes, you know, can he get up again? I really urge anyone who hasn't heard that to get stuck into that conversation around DC. I don't know if you have any further thoughts on that one.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. From a physical perspective, it would have taken a lot out of them. But you pick a team because you think that they're going to be the best to run out there. And some of those changes, like Swinton coming in, who's only played half an hour off the bench, Hugh Sinclair, another guy that came off the bench, a really good worker around the field. There's enough changes there to have them fresh enough. And I think just, you know, guys like Ned Hannigan off the bench, he's showed some really good moments. He showed some physicality coming off the bench himself. So, look, yeah, there might be a tiny bit of fatigue, but I look at that and I compare it to all the changes of the Rebels at the moment, and I don't think that the excuses will match up. Andrew Kellaway is out, Jake Schwan at fullback, Darby Lancaster comes in for a crack on the left wing, a really promising player, but, you know, Filippo Downgunu as well at outside centre. That's three really big changes to your starting back line. And that's what it's been like every week. The good thing for the Rebels, Josh Kemeny back at open side flanker, he'll finally be able to be someone that puts some pressure on the ball. There's not been enough pressure around that area to slow the ruck speed for oppositions, and they've just been cut through the middle against the Hurricanes and the Reds in successive weeks. So I can't see the Rebels. I can see them going down again. I think the Waratahs at home should be too strong for a team that's got so much going on and off the field, I think.
You've seen DC at training this week. How are you sensing anything from him? Is he still... No, he's by all reports, a champion bloke. Is he still champion bloking it out there in training, or are you seeing any signs of stress or drama behind the scenes?
He's a pretty chilled bloke, Darren Coleman. He's good for a laugh. He's accommodating to the media. I haven't seen any changes in him. He's probably the only thing is he's probably getting frustrated around all the off-field chat regarding his own future. But beyond that, I think that's just because he'd prefer to be done quietly in the background, and he's not too fussed with whatever happens with him. He just wants to see the Waratahs just have that slightly better execution in the final minutes to get them across the line. But they're close, there's no doubt about it.
And just briefly on that, do you have any insight into what the current situation with him is? There has been, you know, a lot of backgrounding going on, but close to a resolution?
Look, I don't think so. My thoughts are this will go further and further down the road. I think it's premature what was put out previously from a board perspective, i.e. the idea of him having 4 to 5 weeks. Darren Coleman might have wanted that, but the reality is it's really hard to make an informed decision regarding the future of your head coach so early in the season. I can see a decision being another month or two further down the road, and if they were to stumble against the Rebels, perhaps that speeds that process up. But there's not many strong candidates out there. You know, there's not many Les Kisses out there that you can go, you know what, he's a proven, experienced head coach that's going to be able to make a great difference. You know, guys like Jason Kilmore have not coached very much, not from a head coaching perspective. Nathan Gray, the junior Wallabies coach at the moment, hasn't been a head coach really anywhere. So you'd be taking a gamble with these sorts of guys. Andy Friend's around, but I don't know if he's going to be a head coach for a Super Rugby side going forward. And Mike Checker is still on the hunt for a job, my understanding is. He's up in France. I just don't know if Rugby Australia would be inviting him back in when they probably want someone who they can control a little bit more rather than a guy who's been a World Rugby Coach of the Year like a Cech.
Okay, the player pods on that one. Waratahs at $1.22, Rebels $4.35, and the line at 10.5. Obviously, the Waratahs have lost by 2 points, 2 points, and 3 points. And this week I'm hearing rumours that if it comes down to it and Will Harrison's kicking for the win, DC's calling Christy Doran to the in-goal area to catch that one because Harrison does not miss if Doran is standing behind the sticks. It's proven.
It's proven all right. Okay, let's move on. Saturday, there's a few games. Fiji Drua being the first one. They're at home again against the Western Force. A fair bit of travel for some Cronsmen. Not so much the case for Mick Byrne, who, you know, has kind of made the headlines a fair bit over the last week for even by wearing the Chicago Bulls hat. But he'll be both sides out to try to make it two wins in a row.
Yeah, and he's stuck there in 10 out of 10 paradise, isn't he, wearing his Chicago Bulls cap and taunting Darren Coleman, not letting him escape a bit of trolling of his own. The big story here would have to be former Wallaby Sam Carter brought back into the club due to some injury concerns there. Jeremy Williams with a calf injury out for probably 3 weeks. Sam Carter, tell us about him, his return. Is he a potential Wallaby or are those days kind of gone? Should he just kind of, what's he been up to and what should we be expecting from this guy?
Those days are well and truly gone. But he is a good player. He will add experience, really good team guy. But it says a lot about where the Western Force is at its franchise that we're only 5-6 weeks into the competition and over the last three or four months they've had to call up about 5 players from overseas because of their depth and the lack of it. So, yeah, he comes on the bench and he's only been with the side for a couple of weeks. Reid Princip, the back rower, previously spent a fair bit of time in New Zealand. He's at number 8 for Will Harris, who's out with concussions. So another guy that they've had to bring in really recently who very quickly finds himself front and centre for the Force, but otherwise it's unchanged in the back line and that'll help get some continuity for a Force side that has to do what a lot of teams can't do and that's beat the Drua at home.
Mick Byrne's freshened up his back row quite a bit for this one and they are the favourites quite strongly here. That's $1.25 to the Force, $4.10 with a line of 11.5 points.
Yeah, I think the Fijian Drua are probably a 25 to 30 point better side at home. They can't win away from home, but they can win at home. That's been proven over the last 14 months. So good luck to Simon Cron's men to try to put some egg on my face regarding that. Second game is at Eden Park. It's battle of the two Auckland based sides, Minor Pacifica and the Blues. To me, it only seems like there's only one winner in this one.
Yeah, Rico Ione is back for the Blues with Ricky Riccatelli playing his 100th, Finlay Christie his 50th. It seems like personal milestones are the things of interest in this one, the way the teams are shaping up. Tana Umaga has made several changes in his lineup, but they've been better this season, right, Moana Pacifica, but not up to this level.
Yeah, they've been infinitely better, that's for sure. They've already got a couple of wins in their opening 5 matches. Julian Sevilla back at inside centre. That'll help. Nigel Arwong out in the right wing. Sevilla just will give them a bit more size and physicality in the midfield, a bit more experience, another calm head. He'll be a good foil for Christian Leilefano. But I just think if the Blues there and the guys that they'll bring off the bench, people like Akira Ioane, we know that Ricky Riccatelli will come off the bench as well, Angus Tarbaho. So they're All Blacks that they're bringing on and the Moana side, pretty much a bunch of kind of journeymen with one or two really old veteran internationals like your Leilefanos and Sevillas. So I would think the Blues by 20 points, I would think.
Yeah, the line's set at 20.5 on the play up odds. It's the Blues paying $1.05 and Moana Pacifica $11.
One of the matches of the weekend, I think, will be the Highlanders and Hurricanes. I say that from the fact that it's under the roof. Both sides have a desire to use the ball. It's a game that should get you excited if you're a punter and even a neutral watching on.
The Hurricanes are back to full strength this time after, I think, they rested 14 players the week before. Four of their team from last week retained their spots. Cam Roy Guard replaces TJ Perenara, who I've been really impressed with this season. I've been fantastic watching the energy he still brings to the game, and maybe because the team is going so well as well that he just has this kind of, seems to be playing with a desire that's a step up even from his full energy from previously. As a sign of how strong they are at the moment, Selasi Reyasi, who scored a double last week, can't even make the 23 for the Hurricanes. The Highlanders have Jonah Lowe, a winger who's had to move to the centres after Taniela Tuilagi's red card has ruled him out for a few weeks as well. Like you, super excited about this one.
Yeah, I'm glad, and I'm glad that you don't think that the Hurricanes have been disrespectful by making so many changes.
That wasn't like, Christy, the Hurricanes have been disrespectful. It was, Christy, do you think that perhaps they could be disrespectful? And I do notice that, was it All Black Jeff Wilson brought that up on the coverage as well, which I messaged you about during the week. I wasn't the only person who dropped the D word in. But, look, also you're right, and I'll take that one on the chin.
It might have been Justin Marshall that brought it up in the coverage.
Sorry, Justin Marshall, correct. Correct.
But correct again, I'll say. But the Hurricanes, they've got depth. And, you know, I think the front row clash will be really pivotal in this one because both sides actually got really exciting back lines. The standout play to me, we know Reece Patch was back at 10 for the Highlanders, which is an important one for them. But Jordy Barrett at 12, we saw how good he is last week. And with the in great conditions to be able to attack from, to have him at inside centre, Cam Lloyd Guard back at 9, the experience of Brad Shields, I'm backing the Hurricanes by 10 points in a high-scoring affair. I think it'll be awesome to watch.
Why have they been so good this season? What's impressive?
I think they've been the biggest surprise package, I'd say, this year. I don't think anyone thought that they would necessarily be winning or leading the competition at this point in time. I think maybe their front row. It's an underrated part of their game. But when you've got Xavier Nimoya, Asafa Umua, and Tyrell Lomax in the front row, that's such a strong foundation. And guys like Iosi in the back row, Duplessis Karifi will come off the bench. I think they're pretty well balanced because there's one area that they're maybe not as strong at. It's in the second row. But in Super Rugby, you can get away with that if you've got big, powerful ball runners who are physical both in the back row and the front row. So that's something that the Wallabies will have to consider. There's not too many big locks at the moment here in Australian rugby, but they've got some great ball-running back rollers like your Harry Wilsons, your Valentinis, your Langy Gleasons. There's enough punch there to allow for you to have guys that hit racks in the second row who might be lighter, like your Ryan Smiths, for instance. So, yeah, that's probably where I see the Hurricanes at the moment.
And the Hurricanes are $1.28 as to the Highlanders, $3.85. The line in that one is set at 8.5 points.
Okay, last game, Reds, Brumbies. It's been probably the matchup, the Australian Derby, to most look forward to over the last 4 or so years. It was really nice having Luke Reimer share his thoughts earlier in the week on our earlier podcast with Matt Tamua. But this, not only is bragging rights from an Australian perspective about who leads after 6 weeks, it should be a reasonable crowd, but with a brand new Wallabies coach, Laurie Fisher as the assistant, this is a sort of matchup that I think that can put you on the map from a Wallabies test selection point of view.
Yeah, there's that. And then there's also someone who's well and truly on the map. I think we just need to say congratulations to James Slipper, one of the best Wallabies to deal with, but also playing his 177th Super Rugby game to go past Stephen Moore as the record holder. I mean, it's been an exceptional career, and he's played, of course, for both of these clubs, been a big part of both of these clubs. What are your thoughts on his longevity? He's just something else, isn't he?
I think he equals Stephen Moore Squeak's number there. He'll surpass it next week. It might be against the Waratahs next week, which is a pretty handy one to bring it up against. I just love the fact that he's just never gone away. You know, he could have gone offshore. He could have hung up the boots when he had his cocaine incident, where there was a fair bit of drama in his life, and he ends up kind of being shunned from the Reds, his club that he made a debut with, I think, back in 2010. And I just think he's a salt-of-the-earth kind of guy that everyone loves, appreciates how hard he works, and he's a soldier that you just love to have go into battle with you, because he's always going to give it absolutely every ounce of energy that he's got. I love the fact that he's, you know, Stephen Narkom over the last few weeks has given him an opportunity to come off the bench, just allows a guy to, you know, be fresh throughout the season. He's managed him really well. And he still loves, he looks like he loves his footy so much. And that's another thing about Moore. I like what the Brumbies have done with their bench. I think it's probably the difference between the two sides. They'll be bringing on guys like Nick Frost and Tom Hooper, Billy Pollard, Rymo, who's so great at the breakdown. That could be a really big difference between the two sides in the last half an hour if it's close.
A bit of a Wallabies audition between Ryan Lonergan and Tate McDermott. Do you feel like, obviously, McDermott is, you know, the front runner in that, but is this the kind of game where Lonergan can really, you know, make some steps and close that gap a bit?
Yeah, I think it is. There was one or two nice glimpses from Lonergan last week. He started the season a bit slow, but he warmed up into it against the Highlanders and had a good cameo off the bench last week with Harrison Goddard getting some more minutes. It is. I actually think the Wallabies' selection point of view, the battle of the second row could be quite intriguing. Darcy Swain and Neville with Nick Frost to come off the bench, up against Sarah Uru and Ryan Smith. If those two guys, and I think Uru will be in that Wallabies mix given his utility value, but if Ryan Smith wants to take his game to the next level and get a Wallabies jersey, he's got to come and front up against a Brumby side that notoriously is really strong in the set piece. So big game for Ryan Smith. I think the other one is Hurt's big game for is Noah Lolasio. Again, it's all well and good to be pretty fancy and take the ball to the line well against Moana Pacifica. If you can do it in Brisbane at a venue that the Wallabies are expected to win and generally do, against a couple of young guys and tens like a Tom Liner, I think that'll be a big step forward for him. And I'll say I was surprised that Harry McLaughlin Phillips isn't on the bench this week. I know Lawson Crichton's come in and he's got a bit more. He can play it inside centre and maybe cover a few more positions, but I think McLaughlin Phillips has been very good. I'd expect him to come back, and it's more just perhaps just keeping the morale right throughout the entire squad. And that's probably another example of Les Kiss's coaching experience, I'd say.
Yeah, we spoke earlier about Jorgo and scenarios around him. In reaction to that, a lot of kind of the readers have spoken about Jordy Pitaia, who in this game moves out to the wing there and maybe drifting as surplus to requirements as the money gets shared around. Like, do you think that we're seeing a really pivotal stage in his Australian career, and what do you kind of think are the pathways for him over the next over the next 12 months, I guess?
Yeah, and nicely summed up, it is a pivotal moment. I see him leaving the Reds at the end of the season, and there's a part of me that goes, you know what, he's just not fulfilled his potential. But I don't think Australian rugby's helped him, and you could say that about a number of players. The fact that he's gone between so many positions, not just year on year, but week to week, hasn't helped him. I know his preference is to play fullback. I don't see him as a fullback. I see him as a really, really devastating winger who who can also play in the midfield. And I could see him playing at 12 like a Jordy Barrett could too, perhaps not with the same distributing qualities, but he's just so physical that he could get your front foot ball. It is a big one, but I think he's the sort of guy that Australian rugby at the moment might just go, we're not going to spend overs on him, given that there's other guys like your Kellaways who are equally adept both at fullback and on the wing. And when a Joe Schmidt's picking your side, I can just see him thinking about work rate and doing all the little things well. And Jordy Pitaia's knock is he's not done the little things well over the time. He's turned over possession way too much. And unfortunately, injuries have held him back probably as well. So, yeah, a big game. Matt Greeley is a guy that Les Kiss loves. He's on the left wing, and he's the sort of player that I think Joe Schmidt might actually like too. The big change up front was Jeffrey Tumuanga Allen coming in at tight head prop, with Zane Nongo dropping back to the bench. So probably some good man-player management there from Kiss as well.
They were pretty average last week, weren't they? The Reds, do you think he has a struggle to pick them up after that? Like, do you think, you know, we talked about disrespect earlier and complacency, I guess, but do you think that that is a bit of a wake-up call that they perhaps needed?
Oh, it's totally a wake-up call that they needed, yeah. But I don't think you need too much to get up for a home game against the Brumbies, which has just been that flash over the last 4 years where there's been nothing in it. And you go back to 2020 and the Super Rugby AU final that I was at down at Canberra, and it was fought right until the end. The Brumbies showed a bit too much polish. Noah Lolasito dropped a field goal. They were good without being great, but then it took up a new level the next year that the Reds won. And that grudge and that rivalry has made it probably the match in the Australian Super Rugby calendar to circle every time in recent years. So make sure you watch it on Stan or Channel 9 on Saturday evening.
Yeah, and the odds on that one from playup.com.au, Reds $1.65, Brumbies $2.25, and the line is set at 3.5 points.
Well, it probably tells you that there's not much in that game, and I think that's how it will play out. Hearts, hey, good to have you join. We might grab Nick next week. That way we won't be on for nearly 40 minutes doing the podcast.
Have I been benched for mucking up James Slipper's number of games? Is that what's going on here?
Well, if you're going to come heavy with the stats, you've got to make sure that they're right.
Oh, I didn't mean any disrespect.
No. But yeah. Well done to James Slipper. And I hope you enjoy the weekend, Harps. We'll both be working. But
let's hope it means more people can tune into the Raw, get involved in our live blogs. We love having you guys in there and reading all the content. Yeah, look, we're just so happy to be bringing you this Super Rugby season as it unfolds. It's been a great one so far. And, you know, like I just can't praise highly enough the amount of content that we're receiving from our writers. There's a fabulous piece this week previewing this final game from John Ferguson, which is live on the site at the moment. I know you had a look at that too, Christy, but I just wanted to call that one out. It really, you know, looks in, and you know I like my stats. I've kind of left that with John this week, but it's something that I don't think anyone else in the Australian rugby media is doing, this kind of in-depth coverage of matches. And I just wanted to give John a shout out for that. So, and you as well, Christy, thanks for all your work.
Thanks, Tony. All right, enough for us gibbering on. Thanks for your attention, and look forward to coming back for the brand new podcast next week with Matt Tamua. So until then, that's a wrap. Thanks for joining the Raw Rugby Podcast.